Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more. Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, coming to you live from the shipping container at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and today I am extremely excited to have someone I really look up to in this industry. We have Carla Rozewski. She's the wine director of just some of my absolute favorite restaurants, the Spotted Pig, the John Dory, the Breslin, and now the new Salvation Taco. Carla, so excited to have you on the show.
So stoked to be here. Thank
you. Good morning. Thanks for getting up early to come out to Brooklyn. Appreciate it. Yeah. Also, I should say Gabe is my business partner. He's the chef at our restaurants at Dell'Anima and Lartuzzi and La Piccio. He like only goes to the Spotted Pig. Like it's the only people ask him like, "What's your favorite restaurant in the city?" And he'll be like, "I don't know. I either go to the Spotted Pig or I don't go out."
It can easily become an obsession. Easily.
And I have to say, like, you're doing just such great work there. I mean, there's so many cool wines on the list, and it's really exciting.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about how you got into the industry, how you got started.
I moved to New York almost 12 years ago to act. I went to NYU for theater, and after I graduated, I decided after a few years that I didn't want to do it anymore. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was bartending at Blue Water Grill on Union Square at the time. And one of my regulars at the bar was, he was the editor for Forbes Life magazine. And he would cruise into lunch and sit at the bar and have like three glasses of Chablis and have a chopped salad. And I'm like, man, this dude has the life, right? Like, what is he doing that he can cruise in and have a bottle of Chablis at lunch? And I was like, I want that. You know what I mean? This kind of like easygoing lifestyle. Yeah. I talked to him a bunch, and I didn't know what I wanted to do at the time. I was confused about working at restaurants. I'd been working at restaurants for a long, long time. I didn't know if I wanted to be in the restaurant industry or what. At one point, I was like, you know, I got to do something. So I had a friend of mine find this guy's number, my regular. And I called him up and I left a message, and my heart was pounding. And I was like, hi, this is Carla, your bartender at Blue Water Grill. I don't think he knew my name at the time. So I was like, you know, introduce myself properly. Can you please give me a call back? I need help from you. I have a question for you. And he called me back within 3 minutes. And he said, what do you need? And I said, I have some questions. Can I buy you a beer? You know, can we meet up? And he's like, how about I buy you a beer? And I was like, okay.
Even better. So,
even better.
Isn't that absolutely crazy that if you're in New York and someone has a couple glasses of wine with lunch, you're like, that person is either really cool or
yes.
total lush.
Yeah.
But if you're in Europe and you don't have a glass of wine at lunch, you're like, are you feeling okay?
Are you okay?
Is everything okay? Do you have a little fever? But in New York, that's a really like, oh, what's going on then? They're having
the
multiple
lunch.
Glasses.
But he was having like a business lunch with himself. You know what I mean? It was this fantastic solo mission that he was on, and I appreciate that.
Okay, so he took you out for a beer. What happened?
So we actually went to the Chelsea Wine Vault, and he opened a bottle of wine, and he's like, what do you need from me? And I said, I need to know how you got where you are. I want to be there. And he's like, well, what do you love? What do you want in your life? And I said, I want to eat, drink, and travel well. And he said, okay, pick one of those things and hustle it. He said, you have a certain energy and a certain look, and you have a personality, and you could stand on the corner and sell hats and you'd be fine. So choose one of those things, school yourself in it, and you'll be just fine. So I started taking wine classes and got into it that way. Worked at Blue Water for a while. Jumped over to
How did you choose wine instead of food or travel?
He actually said, he was like, take a notebook and walk around the city for 2 days, 3 days, and write in the notebook, write down in the notebook anything that catches your eye. And I walked around, and it seemed like this kind of random request from this man I did not know. And I walked around, and everything that kind of popped up was eating and drinking and, mm-hmm. and dining out, and it was fascinating to me. And I think with a lot of people who end up in the industry, after having been an actor for a while and studied and been in that world and that community, you convince yourself that you don't want to work in restaurants anymore. You know what I mean? It's like it becomes this cliche, and so it's not cool to want to stay in the restaurants. And so it took me a few years to decide that I actually did want to stay. And it turns out that I'd been working in restaurants for 7 years, 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, it's no coincidence that I was still there. So I think it took a softening of the heart and a kind of an ability to shift my mindset from having told myself for years that I was going to act to gently moving my focus over to something else entirely.
Wow. And so what was your first restaurant job that you're like, all right, I'm in this, I'm doing it?
I was studying while I was at Blue Water. Mm-hmm. When I went to Hearth and I saw how they take care of service there and how they take care of guests and the way that the food was handled there, that was the first time where I had a large amount of pride in the work that I was doing. It was this fantastic, like, straightening of the spine to work for Paul and Marco. I love the family there. I definitely consider them, they're my family. I definitely consider them my family. And then starting to work for April, I started as a bartender, worked one day as a bartender, and then Ken bravely asked me if I would be interested in taking over the wine program, at which at the time the Breslin wasn't open yet, but there was a certain amount of wine in storage, and so I needed to sell through that and mm-hmm. then kind of build up from there. And I learned how to do it real quick.
And how did you meet Ken and April?
A friend of mine was, I was bartending part-time at mm-hmm. Hearth, and I knew that I needed to hustle a bit more. I needed more money. Baby's got school loans. So
NYU, I know. I went to 6 years of NYU.
My God.
NYU
My
is, God. We need to open up 4 more restaurants yeah. to pay for NYU.
NYU is no joke. Yeah. So I needed another part-time job, and I had a friend who was working at opening the Ace at the time, and he was like, you know, we need a bartender, so come on in. I came in, I trained, worked for one day, the Fergusstock, the first Fergusstock that we did at the Breslin, and then Ken pulled me aside and, you know, sat me down in a booth and said, I heard you're studying wine. How would you like to take over the wine program? And it was this moment where I think you have a few doors or windows or portals that open in life, and you have to be present for it. And I think that you have to, like, launch yourself at it fully. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge believer in, if you have the guts to ask for it, have the guts to accept it when it comes barreling down the pike.
Yeah, I mean, you are in the right place at the right time, but you put yourself in that place.
For sure. You
earned it. You put yourself in that place.
I think that it's a lot of luck. I think, I mean, take that for whatever it's worth, that word, luck. I believe in my intent and my power to ask for something. You mm-hmm. know, I think everybody has that power. It's just whether you use it or not.
I also have to commend you guys just so much around all of your efforts around relief for Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, it's awesome.
You guys are just amazing. A couple of friends of mine had put together a food truck and yeah. drove it out to the Rockaways almost every day. But in order to staff and supply the truck, I don't know how many people know this, but the Breslin was just... is super crucial to that. All of the food was being stored there. All of the coordination was coming out of
Thank
the Breslin.
Thank you for mentioning that.
I mean, truly, like, I'm getting chills thinking about how awesome and how much work your team had to do for that. And I just know space in restaurants is so tight, but you kept, you know, enough food there to feed 300 additional people every single day. That's just awesome. You guys
Thank
are
you.
Great.
Thank you. There's this, working for Chef April, there's this, like, falling behind in line with her. It's really powerful to see it work in the kitchens, and it definitely works that way out in the Rockaways. Like, if she chooses something, everyone's like, okay, let's go. We believe you. We will follow you. You know what I mean? Like, let's go into battle. Let's do this. I went out with them once and worked, and it was intense. You know what I mean? But it was this fantastic, very... very humbling experience, and it felt really good to do.
Yeah, and that's okay to feel good, you know, to feel good.
It's okay. It's beyond commendable. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I highly suggest, like, get yourself out of the way and go do something for somebody else.
Really,
oh my
good.
God, it feels good. Oh my God.
And
yeah.
the need was so long. It's so ongoing.
Yeah.
Especially in those cold months, it was just ridiculous. Like.
Yeah.
How much, like, people just didn't have power or anything.
And, yeah.
And you guys were doing such amazing stuff. So, switching gears back to the opening of the Breslin, mm-hmm. and your new role, how did that go? You had some wine that you had to go through, but you're like, what were the wines that you were going to put on the list right from the beginning that you fell in love with?
Oh, my God. I had been taking notes for maybe a year and a half or so mm-hmm. while I was studying at Blue Water and at Hearth. We would taste every day at Hearth, and you know, it's Paul's wine list, so you're tasting some pretty wacky stuff. And I took, you know, copious notes. I'm a Virgo and I'm pretty anal about that type of thing. So I knew wines that I liked. I knew regions that I was interested in and things that had kind of piqued my interest, my curiosity. And so I had no idea how to order wine. No one taught me how to do this. You know what I mean? And so I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It's been this process of like wandering around in the dark, bumping into things, you know, and humility is an absolute necessity when you're in that situation. Your ego gets bruised real easily. But there's no better way to learn. I asked somebody once, somebody who I admire very much in this industry, to teach me, to mentor me. And he said, no, he said, you need to do it on your own. He said, if you do it on your own, everything that you learn will be yours. And I believe that 100%. And I think my movement from when Ken offered me this position up until now has been that exact thing.
You know, you've spoken in the past about how you like wines that are a little bit more quiet as opposed to loud wines.
Yeah.
Has that always been the way? I guess, and define what you mean by something that's a quiet wine.
You know, I think that for me, I'm really glad you brought this up. I have some, there's been this big kind of bloom happening in my life. I am fully in love. I'm like tumbling down a mountain in love with this man currently. And I have felt my heart open up and I have watched my palate follow suit. I've watched my palate want bigger, lusher, richer, kind of like sensual, round, voluptuous wines, you know? And I was talking to a winemaker, Jake from Limerick Lane yesterday. We were tasting, I love those wines, California, you have my heart. And I think that a big reason for that is because my outlook on life is changing right now based on being in love. I mean, trip on that. You know what I mean? What is happening that your body and your palate and your nose follow suit? It's a magical thing, these bodies we have. They're insane, you know? But I think for a long time I wanted these wines that were quiet. It's the same type of wine that like all wine heads want. You know what I mean? You want acid, you want nuance, you want something that can like whisper to you and kind of like get inside you a bit. But there's something really, really seductive about wines that are not shy either, you know? I don't know. It's something that California's been creeping on me.
Oh, yeah, me too. I've been falling in love with the wines of California.
Yeah, right?
When we opened up La Picho, I thought we would do maybe I'd struggle and we'd find a third of the list to be from America. And now it's like over half.
Yeah.
And
it's so much fun.
And it's fun. And, you know, there are so many California wines which are made in this real, real kind of way, a handmade kind of wine, that they are balanced, but it's still from California, so you still do have pretty
it's
ripe
exciting.
Fruit, and it's really exciting stuff.
Yeah. There's this, I think, I was talking to Jake about it yesterday,
Jake's the man?
Jake is the man. Jake's
I gotta meet this man. I gotta get him back.
No, Jake is not the man. Jake was the winemaker I was talking to.
Oh, Jake's the winemaker. Okay.
Yeah. Talking to him about his Zins, and I think Zin definitely has my attention. It has the ability to be quite a big girl, you know, but it also has the ability to be in balance, even though it has all of that weight. But in my mind, if the wine has shoulders that are broad and it can carry that alcohol, as long as it's balanced, it can be quite beautiful.
And so what are some of your other favorite California wines?
Limerick Lane it's got me. The 1934 Black Zin is amazing. I brought you a wine today, the Lagia Meredith 2010 Mondeuse from Mount Veeder. We can taste that, and I'll tell you a bit about
that. And the second segment,
yeah. There are some really, really exciting stuff happening out there right now.
All right. Well, that being said, let's take a short break and pop open the Mondeuse, and we'll be back and taste it.
Awesome.
Listening to Cheese Gainsbourg by Techstar.
Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
And we're back on In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I'm here with Carla Rozewski, and she has brought us a wine. So I'm looking at this bottle, the Lagier Meredith 2010 Mondeuse from Mount Veeder, Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking this is going to be one of those, you know, those kind of like elegant, light-bodied, nuanced California wines, high mountain fruit, some like obscure European grape. And no, it is it's such a delightful and delicious wine, but it's definitely more in the like broad shoulder, gregarious, happy to love kind of easy to love kind of wine. Tell us about this. I've never had Mondeuse, you know, outside of France or Lagier Meredith either.
Okay, so Lagier Meredith on top of Mount Veeder, it's a husband and wife team. They have one of their, it's on their little pamphlet that they hand out on their website or whatever, and I love this. It's the two of them. They have no investors. They have no staff. It's just the two of them. They have about 4 acres of wine, about half an acre planted to Mondeuse. This is their second vintage of the wine. Carol Meredith worked for a long time finding parents of grapes. She was working on DNA chains in terms of finding out where certain grapes come from. She was the one who figured out that the original form of Zinfandel was called Tribadrag, and it was she traced it all the way back to around 1300, I believe, on the Dalmatian coast in Croatia. So she, for a long, long time, was one of the foremost authorities in the country in terms of finding the parents of grapes. And so they have Syrah. They're known for doing Syrah out there. They also have a kick-ass rosé. And she thought to herself, if Syrah is beautiful at the top of Mount Veeder, maybe Mondeuse would be as well. Mondeuse is related to Syrah. And the way that this wine shows, I was recently there in California and tasted with her in her house for lunch, and both her and her husband Steve are just amazing human beings. But this wine made me fall in love with tannin for the first time. The tannins are sexy as hell on this wine. there's this kind of like peppery, piney thing. I tasted my staff on it and they're like, man, Mount Veeder always tastes a little bit like forest. There's always this kind of like cypressy, piney thing that's definitely in the wine. All this beautiful perfume, which I think is linked to Syrah. There's this kind of sweet, peppery thing, mm-hmm. but those tannins, this like really, really kind of fine-grained.
Really fine, like a lot of tannin, but they're so...
They're pretty so as hell.
Teeny, teeny, minuscule.
Yeah, they're velvety.
Ah, yeah, I guess so. It's really good.
I know.
I am getting like, it's the first... it's actually, believe it or not, the first drink I've had today at 10:22. So I'm definitely...
Sally. I was drinking Auschlitz at 5 a.m.
But there definitely is a little bit of warmth to the wine. Mm-hmm. There's a little burn. Mm-hmm. But it is a delicious, mm-hmm. like, that mm-hmm. is... yeah, just a super, super easy to love wine.
Yeah. Very, very, well, very pretty.
Well, one of the things that I love about your list... And this is actually a question that I've been wanting to ask you, because we share a love in sherry, mm-hmm. except you are much better at speaking about it, at selling it, at everything with sherry. I just love it as well. I admire from afar. How did you first get into sherry? And then tell me how I can sell it at the restaurant. <'Cause> I can't.
It's the hustle, baby. It's the hustle. It is... It's this gentle pressure. The way to sell it, I think, is this gentle pressure. It's this gentle reminding for me, mm-hmm. gentle reminding with the staff constantly kind of I was just thinking this the other day. I was like, man, I've seen sherry sales kind of like get a little, every time I do a class with them and we taste with the food, there's this burst of them being super excited about selling the wines. And so you just have to kind of gently remind not only the staff, but you have to do it the same thing for tables as well. Mm-hmm. There are certain, if you get an in at a table and you're talking to them and they kind of become curious or they've heard about sherry, and they've heard that the lists have we have a bunch of sherry by the glass.
And yeah, and your lists are known for having lots of sherry. So you make that statement. You say we're a place, we're
for
a destination.
Sure. You can come find this. Yeah, we have 13, 14 open by the glass. And so the doing flights, I think I'm a huge believer in comparative tasting. So bringing tastes over and walking them through and saying, okay, this is what you're looking for here.
Did you? I mean, the way that I got a lot of people into Amaro was giving it away.
Like,
I,
tell me about it.
Hopefully, like half of these people maybe might order it again.
Yeah,
that's kind of the idea.
It's been a kind of an amazing journey. From I'll tell you where how I kind of got into it. Mm-hmm. But up until now, from when I started selling it and being kind of in love with it, and you know, talking about it a lot. Up until now, people in general are much more curious and much more open to it than they were even a year and a half ago. Peter Liam is the man. He's the dude. I was talking to Rosemary Gray, who's friends with Peter, and she was working for a distributor at the time. And she was like, hey, do you want to do a wine dinner with Peter Liam? And I was like, fuck yeah, I want to do wine dinner with Peter Liam. I don't know him, but I know of him, and hell yeah. So... she's like, well, do you want to do sherry or champagne? And I was like, oh God, I know nothing about sherry, and there's no better way to learn than to launch yourself into the unknown.
Wow.
Right?
For a small aid to turn down a champagne dinner
with Peter Liam,
Liam.
And to go straight for sherry.
Dude, brave. Carla, you have cojones grandes.
Thank you. Thank you. It didn't even occur to me until right now that I gave that up. And I was like, you know what? How am I going to sell tickets for Peter Liam's sherry dinner? Let's do that. You know, like, didn't even occur to me. The curiosity, I think, engendering curiosity is massive for myself, for my staff, for everybody around me. It's very, very important. I think it leads to growth ultimately. And if you don't do that, then you're stagnant somewhere. You have to be searching for something constantly. So we started to taste through these wines and he gave me this kind of like, you know, stumbling through the dark course, for me at least, in terms of, okay, let's do this. Like, let's learn about these things. You know what I mean? I fell in love with the wines. I went down to the region for the first time maybe a year and a half ago, and tasting through the bodegas was profound for me. That was the thing that kind of like took my heart and opened it. And it's, you know,
would you believe the first winery that I've ever visited where I actually went through and saw the production was in sherry.
Me too.
I mean, a year and a half ago.
I've traveled to the region 3 times. Yeah. I haven't traveled a lot for wine at all. I've just begun.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this was at a time I was studying abroad in Madrid. It was between my freshman and sophomore year at NYU, and I did like a summer abroad. And I had this like Michelin travel guide, and they would like rate cities based on, you know, it'd be like, oh, this is a 2-star city with a Michelin recommendation. And so like, oh, I better go check that place out. And then it said like Jerez was like a 2, you know, like a whatever, a good city to go visit. And I was going down even further south, and I went, and it was, I forget if it was a holiday or a Sunday or something, and everything. Any excuse, I feel like, in Spain to close shit down.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, sweet. Oh, my God. We don't have to work today.
Done. Half day.
But the bodegas were open.
Yeah.
And so I went to visit a couple of bodegas, uh-huh. which was really, really cool and really interesting, except that I hated all of the wines.
No!
And I realized that, like...
Shut your mouth.
I know. It's only years later that I fell in love with, you know, with sherry, and I kicked myself for not having the taste yeah. the first time. I also think that I went to, like, probably, like, the Tio Pepes of the world, mm-hmm. you know? Those were probably the ones that were easiest for me to go visit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're the most available to people who aren't being, yeah. you know, hooked up by Peter Liam with with the directors of whatever.
So, yeah, tell us what it's like to go visit a great, small sherry bodega.
I'm going to bounce back to an idea real quick in terms yeah. of educating about sherry. And I think this links in with what you're saying, the wines being a little bit maybe inaccessible the first time you went there. I think that I talk about this a lot with my staff and with tables. You have to reimagine how you view the wines. They are not like other wines, and they cannot be held to the same standards as other wines in the sense that the alcohol is the same. They're fortified wines. They're oxidized, some of them. They live under floor. And so they are totally different. It's like when you're learning about sake, you have to use a different vocabulary for it. It's not, you can't apply the rules that you think exist about wine to this category. And I love that that forces you to get outside your comfort zone. The wines they stand and they like shake your shoulders a bit and they force you to look at them. And I appreciate that in wine. And sometimes it's difficult to introduce that to people. And sometimes if you don't have a gentle introduction to it, mm-hmm. tasting a bodega maybe for the first time can be alarming. You know what I mean? It can be like, it's aggressive to the palate if you don't know what's coming your way. Visiting there, if you have a love for the wines ahead of time, which I was really thankful to have had, there's one bodega there. It's one of the bodegas that supplies wine for La Guita. It's called Misericordia. And that bodega makes me cry when I'm in it. I've been there 3 times, and every time I can step in, I know the smell of that bodega by heart. And the wines in that building, they have a spirit to them. They have this energy to them. I don't know what it is. Call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter. When I'm there, I know it. It is fucking electric up and down my body. Wow. Those wines are insane. They just have this age and this grace, and they have this like insane energy. And so for me, tasting those wines it goes back to what you're saying before. Sherry is not a quiet wine. It is a pretty big, pretty electric wine.
And isn't that one of the greatest things about sherry, is that like there are so many wines, especially in this modern age, where there are nuanced differences that make one wine a little bit different from another. But sherry, there's nothing else like that anywhere.
It's so singular. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's this amazing region.
Based on tradition.
It's dwindling, and nobody is like standing up and cheering for it aside from Peter Liam and a few others. You know what I mean? Like, what if we lost that? You know, what if it became a shadow, you know? Like, I think it's important to stand up for something and say, hey guys, look what's happening over here. You guys are missing out. Come check it out.
It's like being able to consume like a World Heritage site.
It's
like a monument. It's history.
That is exactly what it
and
is.
You're making it part of your body. One of the other coolest things I love about sherry is that you're able to taste a well-aged wine.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Your average Fino is 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
And it costs maybe 10 or 15 bucks.
I know.
Where else in the world can you readily get well-aged wines for like...
You can get some Palo Cortados for 30 bucks for a 35-year-old wine. I mean, think about it. It doesn't happen. It does not happen. But again, people don't think about it that way. They mm-hmm. think about it those are strong wines. Those are dessert wines, but they can be used in such a variety of ways. It's insane. Yeah.
Okay, what other sherries? Let's go really quickly. What's your favorite Manzanilla?
My favorite manzanillas come from the Laguita Bodega. Mm-hmm. Some of their manzanilla en ramas that are the Equipo Navassos bottles are sick wines. Okay. They're insane.
Yes. And do you kind of put manzanilla and fino together? Do you have a different fino that you really like?
Fino, it's Innocente, for sure.
Innocente.
From Valdespino, yeah.
All right. And your favorite, Palo Cortado?
Palo Cortado, I would say my favorite would be Barbadillo, Obispo Gascon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And Amontillado and Oloroso?
Amontillado, Oloroso, I would say the Lustau, mm-hmm. they were bottling for a while the Pata de Gallina, and that's also the Palo Cortado that Equipo Navassos has under number 34. That Oloroso is sick. And in terms of Amontillado, I've just recently had my Amontillado moment where Amontillado kind of like crept in and took my heart. And it happened in Montilla, actually. Mm-hmm. Montilla is the home of Amontillado, according to legend. And the wines there, because it's all from PX and it's not from Palomino, it's from a different area of Spain. Everybody look up Montilla Mariles, do your homework. small plug for Montilla. The wines are a little bit fuller bodied. They're not fortified in this case of the wine that I was tasting, but they have, sometimes Amontillado can have this kind of like angular quality to it. And coming from PX in Montilla, it gets filled out a little bit. And I think the wines from there are fucking stellar.
Sweet. So what do you have going on in the next few months?
As a restaurant group, we are opening Tosca in San Francisco. So that'll be happening over the next few months. Right now we're working on putting a menu together, kind of renovating the kitchen, mm-hmm. getting everything in line for this reopening of a super, super classic, super traditional bar in San Francisco.
That's fantastic. And you'll be flying back and forth?
Actually, no. Actually, yeah. I'm staying in New York. And so they'll have somebody working out in California on that. I'm kind of helping them get the basics, the skeletal structure set up. But it'll be a totally different deal out there.
Okay, I like having you here in New York.
I like having me here too. Thank you.
Well, Carla, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's always such a pleasure to chat with you. And thanks all of you for listening. Go visit Carla Drink Sherry at the Breslin at the Spotted Pig, where you'll probably see Gabe and Catherine and me, hopefully. John Dory, Salvation Taco. And then in a few months, say hi to April and Ken at
Tosca
in San Francisco.
Yeah,
cool. And indeed. Thanks all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.